What is happening, folks? We are back recording a podcast. This is episode 13 of a Surrender Birdies podcast. I'm your host, Alex Dixon. It's been a while, been a few months since we put out a podcast, but we are well into spring. Golf season is, it's not even upon us. We're into golf season. And I'm joined by a co-host for this episode who's joined me in the past, Mr. David Lee. How are you, David?
Doing good. Can't wait for this magazine, Alex.
Absolutely. We're going to talk about the magazine. But before we get into this, and listeners, David asked me to put this out there, but there's a good reason behind it. We have to state that David's not being paid for this podcast, not being compensated in any way. The reason for that disclaimer will go unmentioned, but that is required. But we're excited to have David here. We're having a fun conversation. Go ahead.
No, I just want the people to know it's for the love of the game. It's just all about that.
Yeah, absolutely. So we'll start. Yeah, it's been a few months since I put out a podcast. And as we were talking about doing this, and the motivation of doing this episode was I went to the Masters last week. So it's been, whatever, 9 or 10 days since Rory went back to back and won down in Augusta. So I want to kind of talk about my experience. It was my first time at the Masters, first time at Augusta National, went down for 2 days, Saturday and Sunday. But as I started thinking about the fact that we were going to do the podcast, I realized, okay, since the last time I did a podcast, there's a couple things. One, yes, started selling magazine subscriptions. We're coming out with a magazine that's getting ready to drop here next month, hopefully, knock on wood. And I also got myself involved in a lawsuit against the Department of the Interior. So that's also out there. I'm not going to talk a lot about that on this. I would say you can certainly, I wrote a piece on bellwaygolfer.com. There's some stuff on my social media. You can find the lawsuit. It's certainly out there. As far as updates on the lawsuit, it's still kind of pending. There's been a hearing with the lawyers representing the plaintiffs that are suing the Department of Interior and the National Park Service for what the administration has decided to do down at not only East Potomac, but also lesser so, but Langston and Rock Creek, all the DC courses. And it's still kind of still moving along slowly. The judge has asked the administration for some documentation and various other things that they're kind of slow rolling a bit, but it's moving along. No major updates. And when they happen, I'll certainly let folks know, but I at least want to acknowledge that as we're recording a podcast. The other big one is this magazine, Bellway Golfer Magazine, which you mentioned. And for that, you have done some pictures for the magazine. It's been a project. It's certainly taken longer than initially predicted, but it's the first time putting out a magazine. But it's coming along great. We've got, it's looking like it's going to be 80 pages plus cover, basically 9 major pieces or 9 articles. It's going to be twice a year, premium stock. Really excited about it. Got an awesome team that's been working on it basically all winter. I mean, to different degrees. In hindsight, I would say coming out with a magazine about golf that you want to have solid photography and doing that in the winter is maybe not the smartest time to launch. Part of the reason that's taken longer is some of the pieces I wanted to wait until we could get some good spring photography to add to it. So that delayed things a little bit, but the finish line is in sight and we're hopefully heading to the publisher in the next week or two. And knock on wood, ideally have this in folks' mailboxes that have already subscribed before the end of May. So that's the update on that.
It's really exciting. No, we had a little tour to a cool little course. I don't know. I guess we won't say too much about it, but that was a really neat experience where we went to that place.
We could talk about it. I mean, I've already dripped it out there. No, we went out to Sherwood Forest, is out. It's kind of a little 9-hole course with sand greens out in Anne Arundel County that not many folks have seen because it's part of this kind of, I don't want to say secretive, but community where it's not many folks, if you're not living in that community or know someone in that community, that you get an opportunity to play the course. And it's not like some course that's in a lot of lists or people that necessarily seek out. So it's nothing fancy, so to speak. It's a short 9-hole course, but it's got these sand greens that have been there for decades. And you and I went out and played it and took some photography. And yeah, it's unbelievably cool spot. So yeah, that's one of the pieces in the magazine that I'm excited about.
And I thought I had to go out to Nebraska to play some sand greens, but just had to drive 10 minutes over to Crownsville.
Yeah. And even like putting together that piece, like try to do some more research about other sand green golf courses on the East Coast. And there's a few. I never really found a comprehensive list of all of them. I know there's still one in Southwest Virginia. I think in Salem, Virginia, there's a sand green course that I have not been to, I have not seen. But they're not many. Certainly not in the Mid-Atlantic. I think this is the only one in Mid-Atlantic anyway. But yeah, I know there's a ton in Nebraska and Kansas out there. But anyway, so that's cool. So I certainly think, we've gotten, we're not lighting the world on fire yet with subscriptions, but we've got, we're in the triple digits in subscriptions. So we're excited about that. And once we get hit the publisher, going to market a little bit more and get this thing out, it looks awesome. We got an art director that's putting together, got just sold on a cover like yesterday. And visually, I think it's going to be awesome. So that's what I'm most excited about. And hopefully it'll be a thing that turns into something that people look forward to, even though it's just twice a year, but like make it, make this thing, it's good. We're going to do one every spring, one every fall, and make it something that kind of the DMV golf community, or ideally even broader, more like a Mid-Atlantic golf community can be psyched when it shows up in the mail. That's the goal anyway. We'll see. But yeah, no doubt. So that's the update there. Certainly thank all the folks that have already subscribed, and hopefully we'll have it to folks by the end of May. Turning to you, you did something just yesterday that I took part in last year. I know that the kind of the crux of this episode is going to be about the Masters, but I want to hear all about your 100 hole hike, the 100 as you labeled it, which is you did it at Schoolhouse 9. How many years have you been doing it now?
Yeah, you were at the first one last year, and then we did it yesterday. Yeah.
Oh, for some reason I thought you'd done it like I didn't realize last year was the first year. Maybe
no,
I knew that.
We did scrambles. We did scrambles at Queenstown, Langston, and East Potomac. But this is last year when you played was the first 100. Weather, we were dry yesterday. We had sun yesterday, which is a little bit different than last year, but it's also windier, so conditions were tough. But your boy balled out, 12 birdies, which was borderline unbelievable for some. I had a business trip a few weeks ago. Took the putting mat with me to stay dialed, and listened to some Bob Rotella on the way down to the course yesterday, and putted my mind out, putted my brain out. So
that's cool.
Yeah. So we had a lot of cancellations this year, but it worked out in the end. Had Will Knights from the Fried Egg come, and he kind of saved the day along with a couple other friends who joined last minute and helped out with the fundraising. Had a great day, and the weather was supposed to be cold, but tell me I can walk 100 holes and not sweat, and it's not such a bad thing. So, I'd rather have yesterday's forecast, which was 40s, 50s with a little bit of wind.
I saw some footage. Yeah. I think Eves posted some footage, and it looked blustery. I was one of those cancellations, and I apologize again. I was one of the folks that was going to do it, and okay, well, that makes me feel a tiny bit better. Yes. But when I saw how windy it was, that made me feel like a lot better. That wasn't out there. But I will say, and I've said to you this, off recording, but last year you did an absolute dynamite job putting it together, just with all the swag and the food, lunch, the dinner. You had photographers out there. You really, for a relatively small event, it's not like there's hundreds and hundreds of people. It was only like 15, 20 people. You had all the accoutrement of like a big time event that made the folks that were grinding out there doing walking 100 holes, made it a little bit extra special. But especially the dinner afterwards inside the schoolhouse there at Schoolhouse 9. I remember you had a burger that was just out of this world, but no, you put on a great event.
Thank you. Yeah. I mean, I'm happy to do my best, put my best foot forward hosting, because, fundraising isn't easy for a lot of people, and people work hard for a lot of time to help raise money for Little Lights, for a good cause. And, I appreciate it. I just want to show them my appreciation. So thanks to everyone who joins and raises funds and helps Little Lights out, and everyone who gave too, so everyone that's been reached out to by these players. So
and you're gonna run it back next year, maybe?
Yeah. Yeah. It's been a great success. And I love Schoolhouse Nine. I mean, that course is just, I could go there. I don't know. It's every green is so great. And all together, it's just the perfect place for it. So I can't get enough of it, really.
Is there anything new? So the last time I think I was at Schoolhouse Nine was for your 100 hole hike last year. So I haven't been down there for a year. Not much generally changes at Schoolhouse.
Curtis is crushing it. He's got tee markers now, fabricated tee markers with the logo. And he cleans it up really nice for us. He said, talked to him today. He wants to get yardage markers down around the tee boxes. So, you know, people that don't have range finders can have a better guess at, you know, how far they're hitting. And, he also wants to get like seed or sand mix, little stands over there too. So he's doing his thing out there, Curtis. So, and we really appreciate it. He cleans it up really nice for us too when we go. So,
have you looked at the Sperryville Airbnb market? It's kind of wild.
It's interesting. I keep wanting to Front Royal, just like get a spot and do it. Can we, one of the tournaments we did at Queenstown, we rented the house right on the second hole of the river course and had a great barbecue night. It was, people still
talk about that night. So. Yeah, Queenstown's got a handful. They got two or three big ones and a few like smaller cabins, right?
Yeah, we rented a few spots out there.
That's cool. Yeah, doing that in Sperryville might run you a bit extra. It's because, I mean, there's just such little inventory. So unrelated to whether it's related to Schoolhouse Nine or not, just getting out there, just the location of it right at the entrance to Skyline Drive and Shenandoah National Park. And also, it's just unbelievably cool little town. Yeah. But you go on the rental market and there's not much there. And the places there are there, you're like, whoa.
You can stay above the inn at Little Washington. And little apartment above a 3-star. It might be two. Yeah,
the original owner, Cliff, who I had on the Beltway Golfer podcast, he also owned, his family owned an inn kind of up the hill from the golf course that I don't know if they still, cause after he moved to California, and I don't know if they sold that or not, if the family still owns it, but sounded like, he told me all about it, sounded like an incredible place. And then I looked it up once to see if, you know, my wife and I would stay there. And I was like, never mind.
Not for me.
Outside my budget. But it sounded fantastic. Right. Anyway.
No staying play next year. No staying play.
Yeah. Well, if you run it back, I'll be sure to make it happen, because I had a great time. But congratulations on a great event and raising money for Little Lights.
Thank you.
Yeah. So let's get to what we came to talk about, and that's the you know, we're a week and a half on, but I wanted to record this and kind of get off the schneid here. I'm not doing a podcast here for a few months to talk about the Masters, talk about my time down at Augusta National. I know it's not DMV golf, it's not Beltway golf, but who cares? This is my first time at the Masters, first time at Augusta National, and got to go for 2 days. Got to go Saturday and Sunday, so I kind of wanted to just tell the folks in the Beltway Golf community kind of about what I did there and what some thoughts and some experiences. And who knows, maybe some folks would want to save this for whenever they get a chance to go down. Because I had a great time, man. It was no surprise. Obviously, you have as high expectations as possible going to the Masters for the first time. But honestly, I mean, everything about it really kind of exceeded all of that, both inside and outside the course. So excited to kind of get into it. I got to do an ad read for one of our sponsors and a place that I love, and that's Golfdom. Is that they've got three locations in Tyson's Corner, their original, but also in Annapolis and in Rockville. And what's cool about Golfdom is not only do they have all your state-of-the-art golf clubs, a great place to get all of your gear, all of your accessories, everything you need for your golf game. They've got the back nine room where you can get, they have an unbelievable selection of used golf clubs, really kind of an astonishing selection. But also their apparel selection. At Golfdom. They've got up and coming brands that you really won't find at other brick and mortar retailers, certainly in this region. And so before I went to the Masters, I went to Golfdom and got myself some fresh threads, got myself a new outfit for Saturday, got a nice polo from Cricut, got some shorts from Red Vanley. But Golfdom's got a selection not just of clubs, not just of gear, not just of accessories, not just a great place to get fit, but their apparel selection for brick and mortar around here is second to none. So go check out Golfdom, three locations, Rockville, Annapolis, and the original at Tyson's Corner.
So do you want to start with how you got down there? Did you fly? Did you drive? Where'd you stay?
So we drove down, I'll back up one moment. So I'll start by how we got tickets, because I'm like everybody else. You know, I enter the lottery every year. I don't know how many years I've entered. I feel like I've changed my information a couple times, and that's hurt my chances. Like I've changed email addresses or something. Like I know you're supposed to like keep everything exactly the same, but I haven't gotten anything in the Masters lottery for whatever it is, a decade or two. But no, a good friend of mine who I golf regularly with, is just one of these random connections. Like he has a brother that lives in Macon, Georgia. He has a small business in Macon, Georgia. He rents out warehouse space. His commercial landlord that he rents the warehouse space from has an Augusta badge. And so at some point, and his brother is not a golfer. And at some point there was a conversation that came up and he says, oh, my brother's a golfer. They start a text thread. Next thing you know, the guys offer him, hey, would you want to go to the Masters? What day you want to go? There's kind of a longer story. My buddy's also a Patriots season ticket holder, but it was almost like as a thank you, not if he's even really part of the deal. The guy with the badge turns out to be a Steelers fan. So he ends up, quasi trading him some Steelers Patriots tickets for a day at the Masters. We were originally only going to go Sunday. As it got closer, he was like, I think I'm only going to go Saturday morning so I can give you my badge. As I leave Saturday and you guys can go say afternoon. As it got closer, that turned into, I'm not going Saturday at all. You guys can have Saturday and Sunday. Oh. So that just kind of turned like, oh, wow, we're going to go 2 days. It's awesome. So we ended up bombing down Friday. Got the kids to school, bombed all the way down, got down to Augusta, probably about right at dusk, like 7 o'clock Friday night. We rented an Airbnb. That was a whole nother kind of ordeal, only because I like to hem and haw and second guess and play around with, especially like a big accommodation like that. And I had originally from the day that my buddy invited me to be kind of hit to go with him as the extra guy to use the ticket, I like immediately booked a place, a two bed, like it was already like slim pickings on the rental market on hotels. And so I rented a in town, not walkable, but not too far from Augusta National, like a two bedroom cottage that looked absolutely tiny. And I want to say after fees, it was like $3,000 for 3 nights. So it was like $1,000 a night, which you look at when I booked that was like as cheap as you could find. That wasn't like a total hellhole.
I kind of imagine the scale of things. It's actually not a bad deal how crazy Augusta gets during that time of the year. Yeah,
absolutely. I mean, there's $30,000 a night rentals. There's $10,000 a night. I mean, there's every kind of rental you can possibly imagine. So this was like a tiny two bedroom, one bath, probably 1950s little shack, for like $3,000. And as it got closer, I was kind of second guessing that, and I think it was cancelable. So I ended up canceling it because I saw some better deals as it was getting closer. Maybe some other people were canceling. And I was waiting and waiting until I think I finally booked the one like 2 or 3 days before he went down. I was monitoring pretty closely to make sure we didn't like run out of anything because they were starting to dwindle down. But I grabbed this like two bedroom, two bath that was in a really good spot, kind of close to the other one, but like right in town where I could tell you we could walk to some stuff, maybe not the golf course. But like the pictures on the Airbnb were kind of brutal. But the reviews were good. Like the reviews were like, oh, this place was great. It was clean, kind of basic, no frills. But the pictures were kind of brutal. And I've never stepped foot in Augusta, so I didn't really know the part of town. I didn't really know much. The one thing that actually helped was, well, there was two things. One, I noticed that it was pretty close to the Partridge Inn, which I knew was kind of like a spot where, sometimes people hang out. Yeah, it's it was pretty close to that. I was like, okay, can't be that rough a neighborhood. And it was also like one block. At some point, I looked up some video on like good restaurants or bars in Augusta to go out to, and I found some clip. I don't know what it was. It was Golf Channel, PGA Tour, or something, where they were interviewing players on what their favorite restaurants were in Augusta. And Kevin Kisner, and it was something about the way he said it, mentioned this place, Beck's. And he described it in a way I was like, that kind of sounds like my spot. And this place happened to be like a block from that. And even though it kind of looked like a hellhole, I was like, you know what? The price is right. It was about half the cost of the first place. So it was a 2-bedroom, 2-bath for $1,500 for 3 nights. So we said, screw it. We get down there. We check in. You know, it's kind of a bare bones, you know, not a great little row house complex, but not bad. But the place smelled a little bit. You know, we walked in, the refrigerator almost immediately fell on top of us. But once you got past that, you opened the doors a little bit and the smell went away. It actually turned out to be a perfect place for the weekend. It, you know, the first hour was a little rough, but once we aired it out a little bit and got past some of the shaky appliances, it was a perfect place to stop, or a perfect place for the weekend. And by the end of the weekend, we're actually like, you know what, if we came back, we'd rent this place again, in part because the price was right.
Yeah, my understanding of Augusta is, you know, they dust everything off that time of the year, you know, all the hotels, all the lodging, you know, it's get ready for it. Spring's here, you know.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think Airbnb is a little different. I think that's the other thing I want to talk about. So in that week leading up to the Masters, where I was kind of second guessing and I was like drilled into the Airbnb, VRBO, booking.com market, where like I had it up like permanently for like 5 days and I was like saving their places. The amount of clearly scam rentals that were popping up that week was like out of control, like where they were no reviews, brand new, like seemed too nice for the price. Not like dramatically. Some of them were like close enough for like, man, that's tempting. But they're just like, they're brand new with no reviews. And you're just like, you just, you know, you can't pull the trigger. You just, you know, there's scams everywhere down there. Even through Airbnb that I started Googling stuff and reading message boards about, especially in Augusta around Masters Week, where people will rent it, either an Airbnb where you think everything's secure, and then you get down there and you can't get into the place. And then you message the owner and they say, oh, sorry, there was a mix up. You have this other place. And they say that the last minute you're already there, they've already got your money. And you like, you go to this, like, you know, some shithole studio apartment and you got 5 people or whatever. Like I was trying to avoid that. And so this place had some good reviews.
And you did.
But we did. So we get, I'm going to try to not ramble too much on this, but I, you know, it was such a fun weekend. I have a lot to chat
about.
When
are you going back?
Maybe never. Who knows? But so we get down there and, it was right at dusk. So we immediately walked the Partridge Inn. So that was one of the things I want to talk about. We're going to talk about being the Masters, but we had 3 nights there. I want to talk about kind of our night in each one. And they weren't, you know, we're too old to have wild nights, but we went to one cool spot kind of each night. So the first night we went to the Partridge Inn, which was kind of like, if you look up, like, you know, where do place people go out during the Masters, that's on the list. My first take on that place, they've kind of got a big kind of, it's kind of this old grand inn or hotel looking place. It kind of looks like what's in Pinehurst, what's the main inn called at Pinehurst? The
Carolina Hotel.
The Carolina Hotel kind of looks like the Carolina Hotel a little bit. It's got the big balcony out front, kind of big, where people are out there drinking. You kind of hear people chattering, and they also got a rooftop bar. It kind of seemed like the place that was maybe a CNBC 15 or 20 years ago.
Yeah, I think like in Aiken, there's one called the Wilcox. They have places like that, just well established.
Yeah, and maybe 15, 20 years ago is not enough. Maybe it's more like 50 years ago. I don't know. But it seemed like there was not. It was, you know, it's a hotel. Then that Friday night, I happened to look at we got a spot on the balcony and had some drinks, and there was a scene there. It was kind of like maybe a lot of more hotel guests and definitely people going to the Masters, struck up some fun conversations and looked at what the hotel cost there that night. And I think it was $6,000 for a king bed. And the place, I mean, it's like it's an old hotel. It's nothing great. And we ended up going up to the rooftop bar, which was fine. It was nothing great. The Partridge Inn, I think, is more about nostalgia. It was fine. It wasn't anything great, but it was a cool first spot because it really felt like Georgia or it felt like Augusta. So that was kind of a good starter spot. And we had a few drinks there. But that was it. And we kind of hung out there the first night and then we went home, went to bed and then we woke up and that's day one at the Masters. So we went Saturday morning and got up.
Get up? Yeah.
What's that?
So how early did you get up on Saturday?
You know what? This is kind of a recurring theme. And this is, I feel like I was spoiled saying this, but because we then had 2 days, we had Saturday and Sunday, it was almost that took the pressure off of like, you've only got one day. And so, you know, we had a few drinks after that long car ride down. And so we decided, you know, we're not going to kill ourselves to be there at 7 a.m. So we weren't late or anything, but I don't think we got to the course until like almost 9 on Saturday. And, We were late enough that we missed the breakfast sandwich by like a minute, and I was like really pissed about that. So I had to get that on Sunday.
Missed a gnome too. Couldn't get a gnome at 9.
We never attempted for the gnome. Don't get me started on the gnomes. Oh my gosh, the amount of people talking about the gnomes, you know, beforehand, there, afterwards. It makes me kind of embarrassed for society.
It's terrible. It's terrible. Yeah.
What are we doing? I'm sure they sell for a lot, but they don't even sell for that much. I mean, I'm sure some of them do. Yeah. But you go on eBay and they're selling for, I mean, I haven't checked since then, but like $600-$700, and you're like, okay, you're killing yourself to like, and like standing in line at 5 a.m. to make an extra $500 or $600, whatever it is. Like, no thanks.
I've heard people go in, shop, and leave. So there's just different types of people out there that are looking after for different types of things, I guess.
Yeah.
Which is terrible for a golfer to hear. Wasted.
Getting up early and getting in line in the merch tent never even crossed our mind. But so one thing I will say, we drive up there and, you know, parking's free. You pull up Washington Road, you take a left into the main entrance, you park, you leave your phones in the car, you go down the path to enter the gates of Augusta National. You go through security, they scan their ticket, you walk in, like down some other cool paths, like that are beautifully flowered paths, you know, around some corners, past the merch tent, where I asked the guy, at what time of day is there? Is no line. He said, come back in the middle of the afternoon. I said, see you then. Keep going until you see, we haven't even seen the course yet, but until you see the first place where there's concessions, like where you can get some food, get a coffee, get some food. It's kind of right before the big old scoreboard, which is kind of the side of the first fairway. And so the first thing we did was get some food. And I turned to my buddy and I said, you know, what's crazy about that was this is Saturday at the Masters. This is like, you know, borderline this, you know, as big as the Super Bowl. We never stopped. Like from the time that we were at the red light, getting ready to take a left from Washington Road, we didn't have to stop to like wait to park. We didn't have to stop to wait to get in line to go through security. We didn't have to stop to have our badges scanned. Like it was full. There was people walking, but it wasn't like, it never felt so full that like we are barely slowed down. So that was like kind of the first, like, this is different. This is like totally different. Like this is a, you know, obviously a sold out, like, you know, the tickets are 10 grand or whatever that they are on StubHub. And you're not in some like crazy ass line feeling like you're cattle.
Where do they consult with like the Disney guys to shore up the experience? But I mean, I don't know. I feel like maybe there are lines at Disney, so I don't know. You know?
Right. Yeah. I mean, that's not to say we never stood in line, but there certainly weren't many. Like, I mean, occasionally throughout the weekend, you know, some of the concessions. I mean, there really weren't. I mean, it wasn't until honestly Sunday when it's the final handful of groups kind of coming around Amen Corner and through the back nine that the concessions over there by Amen Corner or by 16, that those concession lines are like legit long lines. But until then, at no point throughout the weekend were they, I mean, there was a couple lines, but they moved like lightning quick. So it was just another thing that was like very noticeable how there's just, it's so overstaffed that's just part of the experience that they're making sure is not something that you're not happy with.
That's the only time there's, you know, two or three groups left on property and everybody wants to be right there, you know?
Right. Right. Since you're not allowed a camera, you know, you're not on your phone, you're not allowed a camera. I did bring in a tiny like little golf pencil and a tiny notebook that I started to take notes and I quickly stopped. Like it's just, you know, writing, you know, I got two big hands to start writing these. It wasn't a very good system. So what I ended up doing is after each day, as we got back to the Airbnb to shower up, whatever, I would get down the laptop and just kind of stream of consciousness kind of I put down some notes and some stuff. And I'm looking at my notes right now. And the first note I have, this is just so random, was this, there's this guy in the gallery, he's a patron, that he stood out so blatantly, but he's perfect for this podcast because he was rocking a Sean Taylor jersey and Redskin socks. Oh. And he was like this kind of short, stocky dude that, you know, he looked like he would, he's probably attended some, I'm judging here, but he kind of had the look like he's more likely to be like a NASCAR event or, you know, an NFL game. But he was rocking a Sean Taylor jersey. And I was like, it just looked, that was not the only jersey I saw on property, but there was probably only saw two or three the whole weekend. Like everyone's kind of in polos, you know, maybe not dressed up, but you know, there's not a lot of NFL jersey. And this guy just clearly had a, like, I don't give a fuck kind of attitude walking around. And to fast forward, I saw, and I regrettably didn't say anything to him that day, but Sunday saw the guy again and he's rocking a John Riggins jersey on Sunday.
Wow.
And at this time I went up and said, dude, you were wearing, you know, I saw you rocking Sean Taylor yesterday. You got John Riggins today. Have you been here all week? And he's like, only Friday, Saturday, Sunday. And I go, who did you rock Saturday? And he goes, JD5, black jersey. I go, nice. And I was like, so you're a DC guy. And he just looks at me kind of like unamused. And he just says, nope, I'm from Tampa. And I go, okay. And then he just, it was just kind of a funny transaction because, you know, one of the things about being at the Masters, and I'll get to this about how there's no cell phones and there's no technology, is everybody's so friendly and you start all these conversations and everyone's so eager to chat with you because they're not distracted by phones. And also everyone's so just happy and thrilled to be there. This guy was, not that he was unhappy, but he was not talkative. And he just kind of stood out. I kind of love this guy. So he was rocking Jaden Daniels Friday, Sean Taylor Saturday, and John Riggins Sunday at the Masters. So wherever that guy is, and somewhere in Tampa, he's pretty awesome.
Good to him.
Anyway, I'm looking through some of my notes here. You know, I'm trying to. I didn't prep a lot for this other than looking at my notes. I mean, the huge takeaway, honestly, from the whole weekend is, I mean, I have a lot of them, but the one that kind of sticks with you is obviously the no technology thing. The idea of not bringing your phone in this day and age is so welcoming because everyone's addicted to their phones, myself included. I might be worse than many, but once you get in there, it's so liberating. And it's almost like so freeing that like, and that you know that everyone's in the same boat. But it's not for a half an hour. It's not for an hour. It's not for 2 hours. I mean, you're there. Most people that are there, they're for like 10 to 12 hours.
Yeah. And you're there Saturday and Sunday too, right? So you have to do a good job of checking up the boards, making sure you can see the scores from where you're at. And
yeah, which I didn't do a great job of. I mean, I tried to, but I mean, being the first time there, even by Sunday, it was still like, oh man, we're out of position. But that whole experience, and a lot of this has been talked to death about people, talking about going to the Masters. But I took it for granted. I mean, I knew about the roars and trying to like, when you know you're sitting over at 16 and you hear a roar from somewhere else on the property, you can start to kind of figure out based on the scoreboard. Okay, Scotty's clearly on the green on 14, and that's where that cheer is coming from. And you kind of try to figure out that sounds like a birdie cheer, that sounds like an eagle cheer, or a chip in, or a hole in one, or whatever. And that part I kind of knew about, and that part is super fun. I mean, we were like, we didn't see Shane Lowry's hole in one, but we were really close to it. So it was like the roar was almost like knocked you over. It was so wild. I think that was six. We were like right on the seventh fairway.
That's a really cool hole too. It's like a Redan, but it's like tiny and doesn't really work as well. But you know, if you have that front left pin, just kind of, yeah. It's some people say it's like the second best par three out of the four in Augusta. So
yeah, and it's also great. It's a great place to watch. Is right behind six green. I will say the whole thing about six is that you can watch from like underneath them, so they hit over you.
and they can't see, and they can't, like, when they hit over you, you're watching the green, and they'll walk right by you on the side, and it's a neat little spot right there. Yeah,
that is a neat spot. I will say that part I think is a little overrated because I did watch a couple big groups sitting on, like, in that downslope on six, so they're hitting right over you, but you have no idea when they're hitting.
Yeah, and you can't.
You can kind of figure out who it is based on the scoreboard, but you don't know when they get there. It's not so quiet that you can even hear the ball being struck. And so when I was sitting there, because there's people kind of murmuring in the crowd, and then all of a sudden you just hear the people behind the green cheer because the ball hit, and you're just like, oh, what? Huh? And kind of get a separate. So it's kind of hard to figure out what's going on. But
imagine it's hard to lock in something. But what I hear is, like, you can see from that space, you can see down 16, and you can see down through 15, and you can see a scoreboard too to see. So there's a lot of action in one spot.
Yeah, that whole kind of corner, there's a lot of cool spots. I mean, 16 is a great, that whole kind of 6, 16, 15, 17 tee, like that whole kind of corner, I feel like unintentionally we spent a ton of time. Not necessarily because we're like, oh, this is the best spot, but it was kind of like everything just kind of funnels there, and you're kind of in between a couple different concessions, and you start walking one way or walk, and you just kind of find yourself back over there, and there's a lot of good spots to sit or watch, and you can kind of see every type of shot over there. So we kind of just throughout the weekend. And this is probably pretty normal for anybody going, but it's kind of there in Amen Corner that you kind of naturally gravitate to, where it kind of takes some effort to find some of the other corners of the golf course that are a little more of a walk and are probably a little bit less crowded.
Yeah, just like spectating any other kind of golf event too. It's kind of like, I mean, we go around and take pictures of golf tournaments and stuff. It's like the slightest difference in an angle and the slightest, spot change. You can get, you can see a scoreboard at one, you can see everything, And so I think just being able to, like, see three different greens and a scoreboard, it makes it a really cool place to watch, like, a lot of golf at one time, even if you can't see tee shots going off on six.
Yeah.
Did you spend time on Amen Corner? What'd you do over there?
Oh, yeah. I spent a lot of time on Amen Corner. I think that was more on Sunday. So Sunday, I made sure to follow Mike Brennan, guy here from Leesburg. I watched him play like 1 through 4 on Saturday, but kind of lost track of him at some point. But Sunday, I watched him kind of go through all through Amen Corner and kind of watched him finish. And really cool. So a couple cool spots. I mean, Amen Corner is just great. I mean, I've heard people say it's not a great place to watch golf. That may be true, but it's the best vibe in the whole place, not just because of the famous 11, 12, 13, but because of, like, also just the way in the woods there and the way the concessions, the way it slopes down and all of the chairs behind 12, especially when it's not the marquee group, like not the final group, but the earlier groups. Like, I mean, Mike Brennan wasn't so far off the lead. I think on Sunday, early Sunday, gosh, I'm trying to remember. He was, he was like in 20th or something, right? He was top 20, top 25. Like he wasn't so far back, like maybe, I don't know, 10 or 12 groups from Rory. And I was able, I just walked right down and sat in the very first chair directly behind.
Talk about the chairs. Did you sit in someone's chair? What's the deal, Alex?
Well, that's one piece I think has definitely been talked about, but I haven't. To finish my thought.
Your audience knows.
Yes, but I sat down like literally right in the front chair, like right behind his group, like not at any kind of angle, in the first chair, and just kind of hung out there with my beer for an hour. I was got down there a little before Mike came through, saw him.
Well, that's a really cool spot.
Time was a flat circle a little bit down there. I was trying to chime, but as he's teeing off, just sitting right, literally directly behind me, I realized after someone, overhearing the conversation was Mike's mom. And so I started chatting with her and she was kind of giving us all this kind of background on his week. And so that was really awesome. Just kind of seeing him come through, on Sunday and watching him play. was a lot of fun. But I mean, Amen Corner is just awesome. I mean, the whole get back to the chairs. I mean, I knew all about the chairs. I know, you know, obviously how it works. You know, you stick your chair down and then, you know, come back to it later. And in the meantime, anybody can sit in anybody else's chair. What I didn't fully appreciate was that it's not that, like, and even as I tell people that haven't been since I was down there, that it's not like, oh, that's, and it's like the first response is, oh, nobody, they don't. And so they obviously don't mind if you sit in another people's chair. And that's, it's not that they don't mind. It's not even that it's encouraged. It's like, that's the policy. It's like, sit the hell down. Like, don't, you can't say, like, you have to sit in their chairs. Like, if you're going to go down there, go sit, like, sit the hell down. Like, those chairs are sitting everybody's. Area. Yeah. They become public sitting areas.
I think it's the right way to do it, though. I mean, it's if you're not there, then someone can sit there. And did you get did you get your shoulder tapped? Did anyone ask you to stand up at any point?
I don't think so. Because we now
it's beautiful.
Maybe I did. I can't remember.
Nothing I want to add about 12 is, I mean, that's a really cool place to watch golf because you have 11 right there and there's a lot of activity going around the 11 green. You know, it's probably one of the harder greens to hit. So you get some chips and you know, look at Justin Rose, you know, in the last day. So,
it was a lot of fun. I saw plenty of people reprimanded. We were sitting on 12 and, we were talking to some folks right in front of us and there was a woman right in front of us we were chatting with and she was wearing a backwards Willie Nelson hat. And, we were probably chatting with her for 2 or 3 minutes when she got tapped on the shoulder. Ma'am, can you turn your hat around, please?
Wow.
So we saw a couple of those. Also, we were laying down at one point on in between kind of left of 5 fairway, left of 6 tee. There's kind of a little triangle on a hill where people kind of sit down and saw some people get reprimanded for laying down where the Augusta National, I don't even know what you call them, the employee or the person, or the staffer, Ken Klein said, ma'am, you can lay back on your elbows, but not on your back. So elbows are allowed, but not your back.
Was it a green jacket that said that?
It wasn't a green jacket. Okay, it was just one of the
security.
One of someone. I don't know if it wasn't someone that necessarily seemed like it was security. It was just like someone that you'd listen to. It's just there's a lot of those there.
I think I saw a kid on 10T. They're showing Justin Rose teeing off, and there's a kid crawling to the spot right behind, just to like. To get to his dad, just sat on the ground there, and I was worried for him. But
yeah, I mean, I'm sure they allow maybe some kids to do things that they wouldn't normally other. Because I also saw. I mean, you're not allowed to sit on the ground near a rope. I mean, if you're away, like in like that spot I just talked about, you can. But if you're up on a rope, even along a fairway, they'll same thing. They'll come by and say, "Sir, can't sit. Find a chair or stand." If you're that close to the action, so I guess they don't want to see it. Picked up by cameras or I'm not sure 100% the reason there, but other than it's just, you know, Augusta tradition.
Was there a hole that you saw that kind of tripped you up? Like, you'd seen it on TV, but it was completely different in person, or you hadn't even seen it much on TV. Like the first 3 holes, you don't see a lot on TV. You see one, you know, 2 shot on 1, but you don't see a lot of like 2 and 3 based on how coverage goes.
Yeah, I mean, they were all a little bit like that. I would say 2. I mean, 2. I felt 2 only because it was like one I felt I knew. Because like 2, I've seen you see plenty. You know, the famous Louis Oosthuizen albatross, the two on two, the albatross. But that especially when someone's going for it in 2, that shot has been played plenty on Masters coverage. I've seen it a million times. It felt like I knew it, especially how the green was laid out. Cause on TV, it kind of looks like, you know, they're coming down the hill, they're hitting that second shot. And it looks on TV like it's a really much like a longer front to back green. And so they land it kind of in the front and it'll roll back to that back corner pin. When you're there, I don't know, that hole just looked, I don't even really know how to describe it, but it looks totally different. Like, I guess I didn't realize how much it curves. Like, I knew how much it came downhill. But really, the green complex, I was like, wow, that doesn't look anything like I thought it looked on TV. It's not as front to back. It's more like a regular-looking green. And the spot they have to land is much smaller than I thought. And it just, the way it's all laying, I mean, I'm not doing a great job of describing it. It's just a lot of the holes just are so much different in person. And
that's some of it's,
some of it's subtle stuff, but then what you've seen on TV so many times.
Yeah. Whole completely changes if they put it on the you know, that left side or the right side in the back, and you know, you just want to be in different spots. It's a cool place. Yeah. Here it's a cool place to watch golf shots back there, behind two and seven, because you know you have three teeing off right in between those, so you can see how three is a really, like, I think that's one of the coolest holes, a short par four that is relevant for pros is that's good golf.
Yeah.
But did you watch three at all?
I didn't watch a ton of three.
Three gives you like a tobacco road. Like you'll see like Justin Rose had a ball roll right back to his feet. A lot of golfers just had balls come right back to him. It's a small green. They can drive it. I think it's the one that Wyndham almost hold it, which has never been done. Yeah, he stuck it close. So
right.
But you don't see a lot of people drive it because you don't want to be stuck behind that green. So
yeah, that was actually one of the holes. That was at like three, like 10. There are a few holes that looking back on, I was like, you know, there were some holes I felt like I saw 1,000 times. And we did do, so going back to our first step, and this was kind of a thing that's been recommended many times, but our first, when we got in Saturday morning, we got into the property right as the first groups were teeing off one. And so we just decided to start walking the entire course backwards. So we walked down 18 and just started, but we were also, and we took our time. We're chatting with people. We were talking about the holes. We were stopping for concessions, you know, but we took our time. And so that first morning, the first group, trying to remember, we ran into them, I think at 12. So we only got six holes. That's how long we were taking to walk them before that first group had got
all the way. Alton Lee, maybe, I think. How tall?
Was it the first group Saturday?
Pre-GI issues.
Right. We were right on the stands at 15. We took seats in the grandstands at 15, right at the beginning of Hao Tong Li's search for his ball on 15. Being totally unaware. Like we were literally, it had just happened because we sat down and like the guys were next to us were just like, Hao Tong Li just hit his ball over in the bushes on the wrong side of the creek. And so we sat down and like didn't see a shot for 15 minutes.
In theory, it was a great idea. In theory.
It's still, I mean, at the time, that was the most drama that was happening on the golf course. It was still kind of cool to watch.
Did you see Scotty's shot? Because he was, I mean, Scotty on 15, his third shot.
Yeah, we did. So we sat there. Yeah. So we sat there. We were kind of, we had on Sunday, we put chairs. It wasn't a great spot. This is another lesson learned. So Sunday morning, Saturday, we didn't get our master's chairs. We kind of just walked around all day, sat on the people's chairs. You know, later in the day on Saturday, you know, finally hit the merch tent, got a chair so that we'd have it Sunday morning. Sunday morning, we were like pretty, we weren't like waiting in line for gnomes early, but we were pretty early. You know, when there's still kind of, you know, dew rising off the grass and everything like that. And we were like, well, let's put chairs next to 16. You know, that's the famous, you know, see some drama on 16. And the ones behind the green, like directly behind the green, so you're like staring right back at the tee box, that area was like already full, but there's still room, but it was filling up quickly on the opposite side of the pond, if you're looking back at the tee to the right of the pond. And we thought we had a great spot, like just directly across the pond from the flag. But what we would learn was like, you can't really see the guy teeing off.
Yeah. Cause just there's like so many photography, people. Right. The angles.
Yeah.
The angles
are, and so it was the same kind of thing. Like it was still cool, but like when you're just sitting there waiting for a ball to drop out of the sky, or like your people are just kind of like, but you can't see the actual swing. It wasn't that awesome. But and there wasn't a ton of drama. I mean, the most drama that we really saw on that hole was Sam Burns made an absolutely obscene putt, like a giant breaker from like 30 feet. Was he in the final group? No, he wasn't in the final group, but he was. Was he with Rory on Sunday? God, my brain. I think he was, or maybe he was he was in the second to last group. But that was the only like crazy shot that was made on
maybe Saturday. Yeah.
So that was pretty wild. Hey. Let me take a break real quick to talk about got one more sponsor, and that's our friends over at the Golf Yards, which is getting ready to open. They're getting close. It's going to be a state-of-the-art indoor golf training facility in Ballston, right in Arlington, Virginia. I just went out and checked out what they got going on just a couple days ago, and it's looking really nice. It's in an office building right in Ballston, overlooking 66. It's coming along really well. They've got 7 or 8 simulators. They've got a state-of-the-art gym. They're building 2 massive greens, one with a bunker to work on your short game. They've got well putt. They've got a lounge area. It's going to be a really cool spot, kind of like a members-only place to really work on your game 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And they're getting ready to open pretty soon. So go check out thegolfyards.com because I'm pretty excited about it. And it's going to be a welcome addition to kind of the golf training scene here in Northern Virginia, specifically right in Arlington. But their website is thegolfyards.com, and they're taking founding memberships now. So go check them out. I'm happy to talk about the food because I tried to eat all of it. You know, it's... here's what I'll say about the food. So, going from the start, there's some things that were obvious hits, some things that are obvious misses. It's so cheap that you can, you're grabbing 2 at a time. But there's some interesting things about it. Is not everything's constantly stocked. So you kind of like, if you see something that you want, you kind of, there's a few things that are constantly stocked, but there's some things you kind of got to grab them when you see them or else you might never see it again, even over the course of a couple of days. But a couple quick ones, the chicken salad sandwich, I'll give a big thumbs down. Not I've ever had.
All right.
And
what do you think?
I enjoyed it. I mean, I'm a big cheese guy. I love Panetta cheese. I almost love that. I eat kind of cheese. I eat too much cheese as it is. I like the pimento cheese. Is it some great sandwich? I mean, it's kind of like sticks to the bread. The bread's kind of crap, but you can eat it in like 3 bites. I enjoyed it. I think I had one each day.
What I've heard,
think I'm going to rank it like the best thing they have, but I enjoyed it.
Yeah. The pimento I hear is the move with the pimento is that you put it on something else, like the chicken.
Sure, or like the barbecue.
Or even the egg salad. Yeah, or egg salad or something like that. Yeah, so,
Yeah, the egg salad is the clear winner. That was kind of unanimous between my buddy and I and some of the other folks we spoke to. I mean, the egg salad is just kind of this airy, super light egg salad that you eat a few of them. That's great. The chicken but sandwiches.
Sweets.
The candy bar is kind of unique. I think they just call it the chocolate bar. I can't remember what they call it, but it's kind of like this. Someone compared it to a Rolo. It's kind of this dark big chocolate. Rolo. Yeah, it's got like the dark chocolate. It's not milk chocolate, but it's got the caramel. But it's kind of this own thing. Some of those sold out. So my buddy at one point, almost thought he panic bought like 8 of them at like 10 in the morning. And then he put them in the pocket of his chair that we left on 16. And he's like, oh, it'll be in the pocket. It was still cool at this point. And they'll be fine because they're in the pocket. It's shaded. Sure enough, we came back later. Not only did the other concession stands have plenty of them. So like, it wasn't like they were sold out, but yes, we came back and they were totally melted. So that was kind of hilarious.
Do you get the ice cream cookie sandwich, Georgia peach ice cream cookie?
Oh yeah, that's good. I mean, I think the cookies are a little too thick for my tasting. Not enough ice cream, too much cookie, but it was still, when it's hot out there and you're walking around, it's fantastic. I mean, I'm not going to critique that one too much. The breakfast sandwiches is awesome. It's just high quality. The chicken biscuit, the chicken sandwich, the chicken biscuit the same thing. It's just kind of dry, nothing special there. What am I forgetting? I feel like I'm forgetting something. Know what is really good? It's like unbelievably basic, but I was like, this might be my favorite one of the next one. The ham and cheese. The ham and cheese is the only thing you're getting rye bread. So it's by far the best bread. Everything else is just kind of this like bland, thin white bread. But they slather it with, I'm trying to remember, is it mustard and mayo? Definitely some mustard. I think it's mustard and mayo. But it's a dynamite ham and cheese. But what's interesting about the food that I found about all the concessions is some more than others, but everything has like a slight uniqueness about it that feels like this isn't just like the same as you'd get from here. This doesn't taste like, this generic sandwich or this chicken sandwich from here. Everything's like, get this, a slight little twist on it that, of course, I'm sure they do intentionally, that makes it kind of feel like their own. So, yeah, The only thing I regret not getting that my buddy said he liked a lot, and I wanted to go back around, but they didn't have it, was the savory tomato pie. I heard it was fantastic. Oh. I did not get it. A couple of things to note. I mean, I didn't watch much of the broadcast. You know, we were driving down Friday. We were watching on the dashboard, but we weren't listening to it. I was running around Thursday getting ready for it, so I didn't watch a ton. Being there Saturday and Sunday, didn't watch a ton. So I probably watched less of the broadcast here than ever. But the and I'm sure they talked about this on air, but the total lack of, because of the season, the lack of azaleas and the lack of flowers was kind of, was interesting, but it was also interesting. Saturday was so overwhelmed being there and just like the beauty of the place and just like, oh my gosh, like we're here and like just walking around and seeing how amazing everything was. I didn't even notice there weren't azaleas until like the end of Saturday. I was like, oh yeah, there's, you know, isn't Golden Bell a little bit more colorful?
Supposed to have it. I feel like maybe it's a little bit too late in the season down there. I mean, you got green grass, you know, down there so early.
Yeah. I think they just kind of had a harsher spring or winter or whatever, but that wasn't something I necessarily meant, but definitely talked to plenty of people that were actively bringing out the Augusta conspiracies. You know, the no bugs, you know, you hear the birds, but you don't really see any birds. See a couple, you know, see a couple cranes flying by.
How many squirrels did you see?
I'm not sure. Didn't see any squirrels. Yeah. There's not,
just I mean, a
the, only,
not,
the only wildlife you really see is the turtles in the ponds. That's about it.
Not a conspiracy, just a question.
I don't think it's, I'm not sure if it's even a conspiracy. I just think they probably blanket that place with pesticides, you know, a month before. Who knows? I don't know.
Yeah.
But it's just the whole place is you just feel like you're in a bubble. That is pretty incredible. I mean, there's the lack of technology. The one piece, you know, that I'll talk about, the no technology. So the no phones thing is awesome. Like it'd be great if so many more places did that, obviously. But the interesting thing about the no phones, and because not just no phones, it's no tech. There's no big screens. There's no TVs. There's no nothing. The only way to tell what's going on is by word of mouth or by looking at the scoreboards that somebody's manually updating and manually placing the score. We see Rory come through. We pick our chairs up. We walk up next to 17. We see we could kind of see him tee off because now the crowd's getting real thick. But we were able to walk up next to him on the left of 17. You know, saw his approach shot pretty clear. In fact, right as we stopped, kind of parallel to him at 17 on 17 fairways, about to hit his approach, kind of looked over to the right of us and two guys next of us. You know, just like kind of craning his neck, trying to look in, is Usher, you know, trying just in the crowd, Usher. Like just trying. I think he was there. He was there with the East Side Golf guys. But that was just kind of funny. He, you know, he's right next to us, up on the roof, watching Rory. But at this point, it's getting real thick, and we were even able to have a decent angle of 17 green, even as we were just walking up. But 18, you know, the 18th at this point. When the leader is coming up 18, you can't get anywhere close, which is totally, you know, understandable. But especially up by the green, it's so deep. I mean, talking 30, 40, 50, 60, 70 people deep, that, and plus with kind of the slope up from the green and back down over near like 1 tee, you can't tell. You can't even see the tops of the players' heads. So you can't tell where the crowd on your side of the green ends and the crowd on the other side of the green starts, or even the fairway. And therefore you have no idea what's happening. Just no clue. And so we hung out and we were watching some of the press. I mean, obviously we knew Rory won, and we saw Rory kind of after he won and all the crowd, all the roars and him kind of coming down the kind of the walkway there. But we had no idea that there was any drama on 18. Like we had no idea that he had pushed his drive way right.
Yeah.
Right. But I didn't find that out until we got home or got back to the Airbnb.
Didn't know he put in the bunker. Yeah.
I didn't know any of that. And so I can only imagine if you're in a scenario where there's like, you know, a playoff and they're going back to 18 and you're on the outside of that bubble of, you know, 20, 30, 40 deep. And there's just no tech for you to update you on what's happening, other than tapping people on the shoulder. What's happening? You just have no clue.
You're just guessing the roar. Just right. guessing what right. what does that mean?
Yeah. But it was, you know, it was pretty wild. I'm trying to think what I'm missing here going through some of the
notes. You said you saw Usher. Did you see any other celebrities? I heard Blake Griffin was out there. I heard Larry Fitzgerald was out there.
No, I didn't. I mean, the only other I saw, Bijan Robinson. Rip. Saw who? Rip?
Rip. I hear Rip is there oftentimes. Year to year. Which Rip Hamilton.
Oh, Rip Hamilton. That's the Rip I thought you meant. I thought you meant I was like, I wasn't sure the context.
It's only Rip I know, yeah.
No, I didn't see a ton, but we were hanging out with, or not hanging out, but went up to the big tree and said hello to some people we knew that were kind of on the other side of the media rope. And my buddy caught wind that Martha Stewart was about to come out, and he really wanted to hang out to see Martha Stewart, and is still pissed at me because I couldn't care less about seeing Martha Stewart, and I wanted to go see.
Can't blame some, you.
Maybe I think Mike Brennan maybe had just teed off or something, and I wanted to go down one.
Watch golf.
And so he's still bitter that he didn't get to see Martha Stewart. But now, no, I didn't. I know, like looking back at some of the social media and stuff like that, I know there was obviously a shit ton of celebrities. But no, it's hard to. Everyone kind of blends in a little bit out there, so it's hard. I didn't see much of that. Here's a couple of notes as I'm reading through my notes here. This was an interesting one that maybe this is common knowledge that maybe I don't know about this, but we ran into two separate people because the thing about the cell phones is you end up having conversations with so many people because no one's got their phone to stare at and people are just happy to talk. But anyway, so we had two separate conversations with people who were telling us when we were asking them, how'd you get tickets and that kind of thing. That told us that in recent years, like within the last 5 years, they received a letter from Augusta National saying that, and these are both people that had applied via the lottery for whatever, 10 or 15 years, 20 years, and had never won anything, that all of a sudden out of the blue, they got a letter from Augusta National saying, you are going to receive a permanent, I forget there's some phrase, but basically a permanent week-long pass to the Masters within the next 3 years. Call this number if you want that, essentially. And the first guy that told us that, it was like one of our first conversations in before we even sat the golf course. He was a local guy to Augusta and he was saying how maybe his dad or uncle or something had gotten that. And so he said yes, and then he waited 2 more years and sure enough, he got like an official badge. And now that person has it, but via the lottery. But then we ran into another guy, I think the next day, who was like told us verbatim the same story. And it was him. It was like, this happened to me. And now I have this badge for life that I've had for the last 3 years. And I guess maybe everybody knew that already. I didn't know that that was even an option to happen in the lottery.
So my question is, was the second guy also from Georgia?
The second guy. The reason we were talking to them, because on Sunday I was rocking an NLT, National Links Trust polo, and a kid came up to chat with me because he was wearing an NLT hat, and it was his dad, and they live in Virginia.
Wow.
I think he lives in Chantilly or Ashburn or something. So not Georgia at all.
So the point I was trying to make is I have a friend who actually lives in Augusta, and if you live in Augusta and if you live in Georgia, you get a shot at it. If you're around, you're gonna get to the Masters if you're down there. And I have heard about those passes going around down there too. But there's hope.
Yeah. I mean, the guy I sat down next to at the 15 grandstand where we saw Houghton Lee stuck in the woods. The guy that I was sitting that next to was a Augusta local, clearly a big golf head, who I remember him and he was way deep into the I guess not cocktails that they don't serve. I didn't know that. There's another thing I was unaware of. Maybe I wasn't paying attention. There's no booze out there. It's only beer and
Berkman's.
Wine. You gotta go to the fancy places to get one of those azaleas. The common Joe doesn't get those. You only get Miller Lite or Stella are your only two options, or some crappy Pinot Grigio or something. But anyway, he was telling me that when he was a kid and he was a local in Augusta, someone would always have a ticket and he went to Augusta like every year when he was a kid and thought that would be like that forever. But he's like, here I am in my early 40s, and it's my first time I've been here in 25 years. Because I thought it would happen every year, and I live right down the street. But definitely met more people from Augusta than I necessarily would have thought. Spinning on that, going back to so our nights out, I didn't close that loop. So that first night we went to Partridge Inn. The second night, and by the time you get home and showered, you know, it's late, and you're quickly into the who's still serving food kind of thing, where it's like, oh crap! Like by the time you get back, maybe you take a shower, check in with the family, and all of a sudden it's like 9:30, 10 o'clock, and you're like, oh crap, who's still serving food? And we ended up at this other place that didn't have any reservations that I looked earlier, but we ended up just jumping into the bar. Really nice place in downtown Augusta called Frog Hollow Tavern that was listed in a lot of places as one of the nicer restaurants. And we ended up just, we ponied up to the bar, and it was one of these scenarios where as soon as we sat down, they're like, kitchen's closing in 5 minutes. You have time to order. Oh. And it was like this unbelievably nice, like not a big spot, but unbelievably nice spot. I misordered. I was looking at the shrimp and grits, wanted to be kind of a when in Rome in the South. And I love shrimp and grits, ordered shrimp and grits. My brother, my buddy orders a ribeye that was one of the best looking ribeyes I've ever seen in my entire life.
And I looks pretty good right now.
And I've had plenty of shrimp and grits. The shrimp and grits was fine, but it was, the portion wasn't, I was extremely jealous of my buddy's ribeye. But that was another spot. We ended up sitting next to a lawyer from Augusta at the bar at Frog Hollow Tavern. And he starts breaking down, because this was Saturday night and we were going back the next morning. He starts breaking down every angle, every grandstand that you need to sit in to see this. And he did say one really cool thing as he got up with his wife to leave while we were still having a drink at Frog Hollow Tavern. He says something along the line, I'm going to paraphrase and can't remember exactly what he said, but it was, you know, it's really awesome that you guys are going Saturday and Sunday. He goes, Sunday at the Masters is different. Don't listen to anybody ever tell you that Sunday at the Masters is not cool. Sunday at the Masters is so much better than any other day. It's freaking awesome that you guys are going. And so that got us like really pumped up that we're going next day. So that was cool. But so everyone that we met that was kind of local was super cool. Super cool. And then sticking to the restaurant thing. So Frog Hollow Tavern, legit spot, more of like a nicer spot, like really nice food, but a nice little, I mean, well, not a big bar, probably maybe 10 seats. But the Sunday night, we ended up at that place I mentioned before that Kevin Kistner had mentioned, which is called Beck's. And so Beck's is kind of a standalone, or it's in this like tiny little, I don't even want to call it a strip mall. It's just kind of on a corner. It's just like one of three little shops. That place is unbelievably awesome. Like, it's not like, oh my God, it's like the greatest place in the world. Like, it's super lively, super this. It's just like an unbelievable cool vibe. It was Sunday night. Rory had just won the Masters. The place was full, but it wasn't crowded. It was lively, but it wasn't crazy. It's at this big oyster bar right in the middle. And then it's got a secondary like main bar. So it's got like a legit bar that you see at any like good tavern. But then right in the middle was also like a massive oyster bar. And there's a few tables around. And it was clearly like locally owned. You know, they served us right up until last call. And it was just like, it had the vibe. It was like, oh my God, if I lived here, I'd come here every freaking day. So Beck's is the joint that like anybody going to down to Augusta, whether for the Masters or not, like that is an awesome spot. Food was great. Vibes were immaculate. So that's a spot to put down. So Kevin Kistner had it right on that one.
Back note.
Yeah. Well, note that I'm rambling here. If anyone's still listening to this podcast, I'm just free flowing, rambling any thoughts from the Masters. Scanning my notes for anything I forgot here. I did rock. So Saturday I rocked a Kemper Open visor and did get some shout outs. Got some Kemper Open love. So that was nice. I wouldn't say a ton, but got a decent amount. Here's what I will say about this. Is goes back to the whole Masters merch thing. And my buddy and I were talking about this as we're walking around. I'm not sure I get the whole Masters merch thing. Like, listen, I love the Masters is great. Like, I had an unbelievable time. That was a bucket list of bucket lists. Like, I'd give my left arm to go again next year. The merch stuff, I'm not sure I really get it. Like, I bought a few things. I didn't go crazy. But it's almost like it's so overdone. Like, some of it is not like they... It's just the same logo every single time. So like that logo can be found everywhere. It can be found at thrift stores. It can be found at, you know, everywhere. Like it's just not, I don't know. It doesn't do for me what I think it does for a lot of others. And I'm not sure why. But so one of the things as we're walking around during the tournament, which I couldn't get over. I mean, I'm making it more hyperbolic than it needs to be, but You know, there's a famous line that's become kind of almost part of our culture. I think it was originally spoken in the movie PCU by the, I can't remember the actor's name, but he's the guy that plays Ari in, what's the HBO show about the
Entourage.
Entourage, thank you. The guy that plays Ari. So he's one of the main characters in this movie PCU, and he says to one of the other characters about wearing the shirt of the band to that band's concert. You know, like never be the guy wearing the shirt of the band at the concert. That's become like pretty ubiquitous. And
Jeremy Piven,
thank you. There's an element of that at the Masters where you're walking down and okay, wear a piece of Masters merch. It's awesome. And I'm not here sitting here judging. Well, I guess I kind of am, but like wear whatever you want. Like I'm not the clothes police. But when you see there's just people wearing, they get the Masters hat, they get the Masters belt, they get the Masters polo, they get the Masters socks. And it's like, it's not a few of them. It's like most people are like that. And it's just like, man, I'm not sure. It's just not maybe it's just not me. I don't know. Yeah. But at some point, call me what you will. But yes, we were making fun of those people pretty regularly.
I don't think there's anything wrong with that.
Yeah. I mean, I guess not. Maybe that's just me. But the,
no, where, no, I don't think there's anything wrong with making fun of those people.
Okay.
No, you're good.
It's just the double. Like, wear one piece of Masters merch and mix it up with something else. It's the double thing is just, and in a lot of cases, it was triple, quadruple. It's like, come on, wear something different. You look like a clown. But anyway, I'm gonna finish positive. I'll try to take us out here positively in some manner. Wrapping up on the Masters, here's kind of a question for you too, but I thought it was kind of interesting. So around the property, they have, I didn't even talk about the phone booths. The phone booths are super cool. Definitely use the phone booths a few times. Some of those had lines, but that's a really cool thing. I called my dad, called my wife, it's a cool thing.
If I called my dad on one of those things, he wouldn't pick up because he wouldn't know the number. I'd just say that.
Yeah. Right. Well, my wife didn't. She didn't pick up. She didn't know. Apparently she tried to call back.
You got a forewarned.
My dad did answers. That was cool.
He knew.
But they have these questionnaires, like these little stations with tablets to do a little questionnaire of your experience. And there's a couple of stations of these kind of positioned directly behind grandstands in the shade. And after a while, when I was just wandering around, I decided to go through one, fill one out. And they've got like 20 questions. But what I found interesting in the questionnaire, and a lot of it was kind of generic stuff, but was two of the kind of questions, and it weren't just two questions, it was like a theme of the questions, I thought were kind of were clues into what Augusta National is building or potentially building or thinking about building. Because one of them was around resale tickets and questions like, and I'm paraphrasing because I didn't write these down, but it was something along the lines of, if Augusta National ran a secure resale platform for Masters tickets, would that be something that interests you? And you'd rank it like 0 to 10 or 1 to 5 or something. But there was a couple questions like that. Or like, it was like, how did you get your tickets and blah, blah, blah. And it led me to believe that they're thinking about, you know, this resale issue and canceling tickets and StubHub and the resale market is becoming such an issue that they want to control it and build their own thing. So that it wouldn't surprise me in the next few years that Augusta National comes out with their own secure resale, something integrated into, you know, masters.com where you can buy and sell Masters tickets through them, where they're controlling the whole thing, they're monitoring the whole thing. Wow. So based on the questions in that questionnaire, that was number one that I bet is going to happen. And number two was along the same lines, because there was at least two or three questions along these lines. Was where are you staying? How much did you spend on your lodging? Would you be interested in staying on property if Augusta National, you know, had, I can't remember the language they used, but essentially, you know, places to stay that were run by the Masters. And so that led me to believe, oh, they're going to try to build their own resort, townhomes, rental places, whatever. But it was clearly something based on this questionnaire that they had kind of positioned all around the place. You could tell what they're considering or what they're thinking about.
I mean, my understanding is they do have a lodging on property, but that's...
Well, sure, but that's...
corporations.
Right. I think that's a level of lodging that I don't think I'm talking about. Maybe that is what they're talking about. Maybe they're only paying attention if I had answered the question. We're like, oh, I spent 150 grand this week, which I didn't. But yeah, I don't know. I thought that was interesting. So that if I were a betting man, I would think in the next 5 or 10 years, both of those things will be built. Is my guess. But
heard it here first.
Yeah. We'll see. But anyway, that's all I got. I'd rambled enough. This is a long podcast. I had a great time with the Masters. Obviously, no surprise. That's not a shock to anybody. But it was, you know, exceeded expectations. And we'll obviously now, you know, do whatever I can to go back every year for the rest of my life. And it might never happen. It might. Who knows? But pretty cool. And Augusta is a cool town. We kind of had low expectations, honestly, for Augusta itself. And I enjoyed it. I thought it was a sleepy town, as everyone likes to call it. But
not cool in April.
I enjoyed it. That's all I got on the Masters. We'll wrap it there, unless you got anything to add to the end there. It was a great weekend.
Is this the part where you give away the promo code for the free magazine? For the listeners who stayed on this long,
I should. I don't have one yet, but yeah, if I was a good marketer, yes, that's when I would have done that, but I'm not. Yeah. but for those, I will say, you know, thank you for leading into the plug. Head out to bellwaygolfer.com/magazine, or you can click on the link to the magazine in the homepage, and you can subscribe right there. Spring and fall issue, the spring issue, the inaugural issue will be hitting mailbox ASAP, as soon as we can get out, hopefully in May, but we're getting out as fast as we can.
Can't wait.
Absolutely. All right, David, really appreciate it. We'll talk to you soon.